This is a production of Cornell University.
CJC, January 30th, 2007.
Violation on copyright infringement. Counsel's office initiated this request, and it's something that, as soon as we get immediate matters, and I explained this to Tracy, that immediate business at hand is the president's request and the university assembly's request. But this is a very important issue that we will need to address it, hopefully before the semester's out, if we can.
This is four issues.
Yeah, there's a number of issues. The main one is adding copyright infringement to our list of violations. So I'm just sharing this with you so that you know it's on our agenda. It's something that we will need to discuss, like I said, hopefully this semester. The other matter we can address administratively, Marty, do you want to raise this one? Because we don't need to vote if someone's going to write a letter for us.
I don't want to address it. I was pointing towards Jeff and thinking what he's thinking about this.
Responding to that editorial.
Yeah.
I guess
I would say that if we had a statement of what this opportunity presents in terms of using the liberal, and I don't mean that in a political sense, I mean using the progressive, that's the best way, system of campus governance that's in place to avoid the kinds of, you know, sort of scare kind of tactic things that are discussed there, which is your rights are being taken away. Well, what do you expect people to do? Go out in the streets? The point is you don't need to because we have a mechanism in place with the UA. Using the opportunity, in other words, to use the system if you want to, rather than feeling like you have to rail against it and then be defeated.
Best idea might be get in touch with Erica, who's a pretty open-minded person, and convey those thoughts. Encourage Erica to write another editorial later this week or on Monday, encouraging people to attend, giving her the information that we think overlooked but didn't have when she last wrote that.
Yeah.
But instead of...
Well, since you know her, it might be better.
Sure.
Yeah. And there were, I want to read this, but there were a little bit of some inaccuracies in there.
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
They're inaccurate.
So there's actually two methods here, and two reasons for this. One is to clarify inaccuracies, and two is to get people to be, you know, participating by attending the open forum or going online to the website.
I'll talk to you two afterwards, and if we could just get like three main corrections. I'm very happy to do this, but because she's also my editor, I can't persuade her too much.
Well, here's what I think about that, and it relates to a point on the agenda, so I don't want to preempt the point, but I'll just say this is how to process community input and formulate a report to the UA. The processing of community input has already started. I've been involved in writing letters and taking, you know, a good chunk, 2-3 hours out of my day, several days thus far, to write a letter that I think reflects in response to direct letters that have been sent to me by people in the administration, by people, fellow faculty members, and so forth. And I'm just saying that we're committee members, and you wouldn't be speaking as a person who is working as an editorial, you know, as you would be speaking as a committee member.
Yeah.
And when we get to the point of how to process community input, I want to actually disperse the duties. That's my proposal, and this is the beginning of it, just in response to this particular issue, and that is that the people who are from the respective communities will take the input. Now, I have Kathy, you started by people having written you about, I think there was something you forwarded to me from somebody in enforcement division side of things. It was a while ago.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing is really what the way the committee will work well, and we can be more specific in this item number five, formulating how to process the community input by people on the committee being prepared to pick up their respective areas of campus.
Okay.
Okay.
We now have a quorum. Has everybody read the minutes? I believe they were sent to you this morning, and I think there's also copies there. Does anybody have any questions, comments, changes, additions, deletions, any other comments to make about the minutes?
Are they even updated? Is it just the
red
in there?
The red.
Okay.
Anybody
object to accepting them as written?
I move. We accept them.
Okay, we accept the minutes as written. They now can go take the red out. By being held. They can go online.
Okay.
And the results of the email to the community, I talked with Peggy a little bit this morning. I'll give you a chance to get your photo. And Marty has already addressed it. He and I both have had some comments from the community. The email from Tracy Matrano, for example, is an example of somebody who read the email and suddenly became aware that the Coastal Leadership Committee exists. And that's partly why she wrote us. So if nothing else, we're becoming known as a way of getting things processed. If you had a moment to get your breath.
I think we had about 10 more people. Actually, Ari took the we were able to capture.
Oh, okay.
And so this.
We've had there's been at least 10 more responses since.
Yeah, and so this is a summary of all responses that have been submitted through the blog. So I do think it's important for all of the members, who are going to be processing this to read through them to see what people are saying. Of course, these are up on the website and anybody can look at them, based on the category. I haven't read them myself.
Ari, have you read them? Is there
not
substantive in there that you need to?
What are you talking about, substantive?
Well, related to the related to
their
three major items.
Just have to see if the three major items.
I've read all the comments.
Okay.
And I'm just now reading the few that have come in since January 24th, and they're very short. We could actually read them right now. It seems to me like it's continuing what happened in December in terms of the shape of the comments,
mm-hmm.
and their. For the three major areas that we're dealing with, and probably for the others.
I want to note on page 5 the response by Susan Howell might be very lengthy, but she is the person that deals with traffic violations and transportation, so she's that person weighing in on how it might affect her. I didn't read it.
I read it.
For word, but
I read it.
I think it's, we're interested in hearing from that.
Right, and I've had two anonymous communications to me from staff people and one from faculty, one from staff about related matters at considerable length with a related tone, I guess you could say, and with related points. That were raised.
Do you know if we would have permission to put the Galbraith comments on here? Because I thought they were really interesting.
He shared that with me, I think, with the idea. I told him I was going to send it to the committee.
Okay.
It probably wouldn't hurt. If either you or I at least run it past him, depending on what you want to do with it.
Okay.
He spent a lot of time, this is the email I sent around to the committee on the 26th, a couple days ago. Glenn is very involved in the university in a number of ways. He's also a judge in Cedar Heights. He's a law professor, clinical professor at the law school. And as I said in my email, he was chair of the hearing panel, very involved with the hearing panel for 4 years. Feels very strongly about how that runs specifically. And so he took the time to write this up. He also took the time to speak with me directly about this. I just think it would be a courtesy to touch base with him on it. And I did, I actually rearranged his initial report a little bit to bring the immediate issues up to the front and the more specific ones to the back. And he understands that we can't address the specific ones at this point.
Sure.
But yes, it was nice of him to spend the time on it. You've received some emails, I've received some emails, you've received, sounds like everybody's sort of receiving emails.
How many others have received emails personally that have not been directed to the whole group? Right.
How do we best share these with
us? I think what we need to do, and that's comes to the end of how do we process the community input. Maybe we're just bumping that forward.
We're bumping that a little bit because Mary Opperman's...
What I suggest is that we all look at the email... I'm presuming that the emails that have come to you are from members in your area, sector, right? Whether it be staff or faculty or...
Mine was more just information gathering. It was like they read the first couple of paragraphs and then get down to where they could go to the open forum on Monday. So it's just kind of redirecting to that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it wasn't somebody expressing an opinion about things.
No.
Oh, okay.
Just wanted,
okay. In the case of opinion matters, then I would suggest that we, in the case of mine, they're anonymous. They don't want to remain anonymous.
Right.
So what I would do is summarize those matters for the specific areas that they're talking about and then bring it to the table. And then I think we just ought to all eventually digest all of the opinion here, and if we want, we can split it up amongst the various constituent areas and have individuals make crises of opinion for their region of the campus, I guess you could say. Staff members looking at staff contributions and faculty, that'd be a way of spreading it around. That was my thought.
Okay.
Suggestion would also be, it would be nice if those comments or the substance of them ended up with all the other comments online, unless they're really...
Well, if they ask to be anonymous, I'm going to keep them anonymous, and I'm going to rephrase them so that they aren't known.
But the website supports anonymous comments, too. So.
But it's, talks about individual circumstances in departments or divisions of the university and conflicts between staff that would be easily identified.
Okay, why don't we... hold us to continue this discussion further on our agenda since Mary Opperman kindly scheduled us into your, I'm sure, busy schedule. And we asked you here, Mary, to address the potential impact of having non-student members of the community, basically staff and faculty, taken out of the judicial process. And in addition to that, one of the proposals has been to extend the code of conduct beyond the campus boundaries. So presently, it's my understanding that if a staff member, let's say, takes money for tickets at the Schultz Center, steals from the till, that's considered part of their employment, and it would be handled through employment or related matters like their supervisor and such. But if that same person were to go and steal from a campus store, they presently, correct me on this, Kathy, would either be sent downtown or for DJ 8 or both.
Yes, right. Generally down.
Is that
generally
correct?
J8.
Right. That's correct. The supervisor probably would never know about it.
Right. That's the decision as to whether or not it's handled as a code matter is whether it has anything to do with their employment.
Right. So if the cross report recommends taking that judicial process and just applying it to students. So the same person, now, if they were caught stealing from the store, it would go to their supervisor, is my understanding.
Right. My understanding of the recommendation is that all matters for staff would be handled essentially as a matter of employment.
Right. So what does that mean both to the employees and to their supervisors?
Well, in a practical sense, it doesn't mean a real lot. We don't have a lot of staff whose conduct is reviewed as a matter of the JA, because for the most part, staff are here in the course of their employment. It seems to me that there's two issues that, and actually the employee assembly and I still need to talk about how to get, they'll be taking the lead on it, but how to make sure that we have enough conversations with staff so that we get a full set of opinions. So right now these are just mine. It seems to me that the two issues that I'm thinking about are less, frankly, about a staff member's conduct and more about if a staff member is experiencing conduct in the community from someone else, from a student, for example, how they would go about, or a faculty member, how they would go about having a matter that there was still going to be a code that everyone would adhere to. So a community code, how a staff member who felt that something that had occurred to them on the campus, but not in the course of, in other words, not an employment matter, how they would go forward to deal with that. So that's what one set of questions that I would think we'd need to understand. The other really does relate to extending the code beyond the campus. You know, my view is that the reason that the staff are here is for their jobs, and when they leave here, unless their conduct has some direct relation to their job, their conduct off the campus is their private matter. And it concerns me if their conduct past the campus walls is considered a part of their employment.
About the first matter, are you describing a circumstance where a staff member could potentially be a complainant?
Right.
Okay. Well, that's already a part of the JA.
No.
Yes.
I thought
and
I
would. And you're now talking about what would happen should the staff be covered by their behavior, but there they could continue to be a complainant against the student, and that would go to the JA's office. It wouldn't, because the student wherever the office is, it would go to the student area.
Right, but in the case of, for example, a faculty member, if they had
if the staff was complaining about a faculty member.
Right, but not in the course of an employment matter.
Like a harassment problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so the problem would be that the staff would then have to complain to the dean of the faculty member's college.
See, the way, and again, I'm trying not to be evaluative. I thought I was being asked, what do I see as issues to fully explore?
Well, I'm exploring it with you, but that's the issue you're bringing
up.
Yeah,
so the two issues I'm trying to understand is, the idea is that there's still code that covers everything.
Right.
Yes. But then, what happens if the code is alleged to be violated? Where does that go? Right now, the code covers everyone, and then the review is the same review for everyone, unless it's a matter of employment. When a staff member's review now goes to what is now their employment-related review, and the faculty member's goes to, you know, the dean of faculty, and the student's goes to the new version of, you know, the student code. I'm trying to understand how a staff member is able to bring forward a concern.
Well, in the proposed code, which we're exploring now, if it were a faculty member harassing, let's say, a staff member, the staff member would have the right to, under the code, bring the non-work-related behavior context to the dean of the faculty member's college.
Right. In terms
and
of...
So that's not... How would you want to further explore that question?
Well, I guess in terms of redress, there's right now the code covers everyone the same, whether they are a tenured faculty member or a student or a, you know, a service employee. And so redress is considered the same for everyone as well. You know, would there be an openness, for example, for redress if the matter were determined to have merit? Would the dean of faculty sanction that faculty member?
Well, that's an issue.
Well, that's my question. Otherwise, how does the staff member? There's an avenue, but how does the staff member's right to be covered fairly under the code to be ensured?
So part of your exploration has then turned into a concern, one might say, because it implies that there's not any discussion or clear statement of how should the current system be supplanted. A complaint would be justly, one could say, processed in the new system as proposed.
Right. I'm not sure I'd register it as a complaint. I'm not clear yet.
No, I said concern. I didn't say
complaint. I'm sorry. I'm not sure I'm all the way up to a concern, but I'm certainly not clear because I have the same question if it's two staff members, but it's not in the course of their employment. Do you go to the supervisor of the, it's not in the course of their employment, so how do those things get? I just need to understand how you use the three different.
And in particular, too, when you've got cross complaints, like harassment or particularly about dean, no matter how you look at them, and you might have a faculty member who thinks they have a legitimate complaint against a student, that same student might be complaining about the same action against faculty members, and they're both going to different sources to try to resolve the same problem, and each one's handling it. It seems very convoluted. I mean, the separation of student, staff, and faculty
it seems useful to us, if you wouldn't mind, for you to record that very question in the informal form in the at wherever it applies, staff to staff, staff to faculty, faculty to staff. If I guess as in employment, you would consider faculty also, right? And I want to. So would you mind?
Yep.
That would be wonderful, because then your comments will be officially in the. One thing I had to ask is I've had two people speak to me about, not write it down, the question of where the separation between what constitutes an employment-related issue and a non-employment-related concept can take place. And I don't know that we need to, at this point, spend a lot of time on that, but they have raised the question that when employment-related, what they've called, they've raised instances with me where employment-related violations, what they consider violations of the code, have been unjustly treated in their work circumstance, and they would like to have those be placed under the code as well and dealt with in an independent judicial system. And they've made the case. These are faculty members who have been, one's faculty, one staff, who have been here for 20 years, 20-some years, and they wish to remain anonymous. They've made the case that this is a major issue, and that it is one that is deeply involving human resources and other departments, and should be on the table at some point. I'd like your comments on that.
Well, I don't know the details, so I'll tell you.
No, you don't, but I'm just saying the general concept of work-related versus non-work-related.
Well, I understand the idea, the general concept of a completely neutral review of employment, but in fact, there isn't a completely neutral review of employment because ultimately the decision whether to keep someone in the employee is the decision of the employer. So, without knowing any of the details and not knowing why the issues were as big as they were, I think what I heard you say is they started at the judicial administrator and were moved.
No. They started. They had no redress to the judicial administrator, so they used the ombudsman.
I see. I'm afraid I just can't.
Okay. In a case of harassment, for example, how does one separate what constitutes a work-related harassment and a work context harassment and non-work context harassment by a superior, for example?
If harassment is on the basis of a discriminatory reason, it's all employment because the law requires the employer to treat it all as employment related.
And sexual harassment.
Sexual harassment, gender, sexual orientation, those are all by legal definition employment related.
Even if it doesn't take place in the course of employment.
Okay. Even if it doesn't, if the two individuals are employed and the complaint comes through the university, it is employment related.
Another thing that I would think worth...
If, for example, in a bar, an employer and an employee
and the supervisor
harasses an employee, that's a work-related harassment.
If the employee alleges that they're, I'll take it a little bit farther. If the employee and if the supervisor and the employee are in a bar, and the supervisor propositions the employee, and the employee says no thank you, and the situation ends. And then back at work the next day, the supervisor reassigns the very best work to someone else.
Well, no, I'm talking about just the harassing circumstance.
Well,
because the code allows that circumstance, if it takes place, let's say, not in the bar, but in a cafe, or in corner of campus, that would be considered a harassment circumstance, too. If the person pursues the other person.
Yes, if it's unwelcome.
Right.
It's only a matter of employment if it has or could have an impact on employment. So if a supervisor is involved, by definition, that employee has the right to have that looked at as a matter of employment.
But what if it's, just to make sure I'm clear on this, and by the way, my apologies, I didn't introduce you. Mary Opperman is the Director, Vice President for Human Resources. And this is why I was asked to address the staff question as part of this. So let's maybe clarify this a little bit. So let's say the staff member is in one department and the faculty member is propositioned is in a different department. That's not work-related because that faculty member has no control over
It's
so
not.
That would be totally
that's right. And it's not work related, by the way, if the two are in the exact same department and the employee whose proposition doesn't perceive it as unwelcome. It's only a matter of for the employer to be concerned about if that individual who is either in a subordinate role and therefore could be subjected to behavior which is could form a loss in terms of employment, mm-hmm. perceives it as unwelcome.
Okay, the last thing I just want to say is that this relates to the question of how far the code applies, whether it applies outside of the workplace or in the workplace. And I think we'll have to discuss it as we're coming to our conclusion about that.
Right, but if I understood you correctly, under the present code, if it happens off campus and the person comes into work the next day, that feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's not under the code. That's the
right.
Law protects an employee from harassing behavior by a supervisor or someone
whether
with authority.
Whether it happens in the office or outside the office.
If it's unwelcome, and if the individual either feels that there's a pattern of behavior, so it's a hostile environment, or a quid pro quo or potential quid pro quo, meaning that they have something to lose at the employment. That exists by law, and nothing that our code does has any impact on our obligations as an employer. That's very different from the second question I was raising, which is not a matter comes here on the basis of someone feeling discriminated against, but rather there is a set of behaviors that occur. Let me give you an example. An individual belongs to a particular group. Affiliated with a political group or a religious group, and that group has a very forceful way of getting their point across at the commons. You know, they're loud, they're whatever on the commons on a Saturday, and another person goes by and is offended by that. Right now, that has nothing to do with work, and it's not code. It's not employment related. even if that individual maybe says things that to the individual walking by, or they engage in a very serious conversation between them where they're not nice to each other, where they violate the premise of the code. It occurs off the university, has nothing to do with work. The concept of expanding the expectations of the code itself beyond the university, what would happen in that circumstance? Does the, you know, whoever, student, faculty member, staff member, can they bring forward a complaint to the supervisor, to whomever? If the code covers you wherever you are, does that cover you in your non-employment world? And is that what we want?
And I think that brings up right away the question for students off campus in a non-educational world. The university there must tell us that we do not work here. We are not employees. So then, if employee conduct outside of work isn't covered, is student conduct outside of education being covered?
Yeah.
This all keeps moving towards there should be one standard that we can all...
I interrupted you, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add, I think there's another issue sort of lurking here that I'd like to hear a staff perspective as to whether this would be a concern. Is you can imagine a case where you have multiple status. So for instance, you have a full-time staff member, somebody who's been here 15 years, decides to also take a Spanish class one semester. So now that person is also a student.
Mm-hmm.
And so hypothesizing that the Krauss recommendation of taking technical staff out of the that same staff person, let's say, is now alleged to have vandalized university property on a Saturday that had nothing to do with work. So already we have a possible double sanction issue, both between criminal sanctions and JA sanctions. Wouldn't we then in that situation have a triple sanction, because the person could be criminally punished as a citizen, JA'd as a student, and sanctioned at work as an employee?
But I think you have that now. I'm not sure that actually changes, depending on the matter and the individual's employment. You could potentially have that today. So, depending on the work they do and what the on-campus behavior was. So if they, that could occur today.
How would the supervisor find out if somebody did something and they got JA'd for?
Well, they might not if they got JA, but if there was a vandalism on, we might find out because they got arrested.
Okay.
We always look at matters that are not purely in the sort of 9-to-5 realm as, does that have anything to do with their employment? In other words, do they have, so let's say it's a matter of stealing. Do they have keys? Are they left unattended? Could that stealing have is that a risk? Are we running a risk?
Well, hence the example about the ticket taker at the Schultz Center. Because
mm-hmm.
people had raised the question with that example that, okay, they stole off at a store outside of their job, but would the supervisor want to know because it's indicative of they could potentially steal from the job?
Right.
So that is one thing. I mean, is that something supervisors would want to know for that reason? But the employer will say, well, I didn't do it as part of my job. So where do you fall? Do you fall on the side of the employer saying it's my private business, or do you fall on the side of...
When you're up on this campus and you are here in the performance of your duties, I take a pretty broad look at what is employment related. If you're talking about what they do in their private lives, and so let's say they're passing bad checks, which is something we've actually had an issue with, if they are not charged with the stewardship over university funds, then I've taken the position that we don't have risk. I mean, it's bad, I'm sorry for them. But if they're in the somewhere along the chain of being able to get university funds, then I take the position that it's work related. It's a one by one by one review.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking back to the example of the two staff members who had the disagreement outside of work, you know, like at the bar or sexual harassment at a cafeteria. Wouldn't that come back to being work-related should the two, you know, if they were in the same department, if it conflicted with their work, as if they had common goals, if they needed, if they couldn't get work done as a result of this misunderstanding, wouldn't that become an HR issue? Mm-hmm. And they not need to be addressed by the code?
Right. It is a fairly common matter that what happens outside of work is hard to leave outside of work and gets back here because of behavior, complaints, or whatever. But that actually is different than by code, all behavior having the potential of coming back. So your example is exactly right. They come back, they can't, they refuse to work together, or they're fighting all the time. Then their actions actually are now on the campus and in their workplace. So then it would be work-related.
Except that I think what he was saying is that it becomes an HR issue, and therefore it's not a problem of the code. What you're saying is that it becomes work-related, and so it's not a problem of
right.
the code. Is that what the two
right.
were
saying? But if they were from different departments, then it probably wouldn't be work-related under the present.
I think some of the difficulty that we're having here is the whole concept of work-related, and when you broaden that definition to Cornell being the workplace, then you try to think about a supervisor being the point of contact, and it is fairly common here that it isn't that you don't go to the supervisor on a work matter that's very complicated like this, because it's about, I mean, we have people whose relationships end, who have all sorts of, you know, right. we have to deal with it because it's up here.
Yeah.
But we actually try to keep as much of that as we can out of that work unit. So I think another question that we need to grapple with is, it's work-related, so what does that mean? Because it isn't always sensible that it would have anything to do with a supervisor. If it doesn't have to do with the job, then why would you pull somebody's supervisor into a domestic dispute? I don't think we would want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have those regularly up here.
Going back to your initial saying about a situation where, you know, presently you can JA somebody, cross-report, you wouldn't have that option. Take it out of the workplace. Is this something that, if the cross recommendations were followed through, that your office would create something for staff and faculty to have as a recourse?
Right. I guess my it's not so much that I don't know that it would be there. It's that I need to understand how it would be there.
Mm-hmm.
If staff don't use the code.
Right.
All that often. What I'm trying to figure out, one thing that was very important to me is that if everyone be held to a certain standard, the same standard, that not by the definition of who you are, if we're talking about fair treatment and respect, that it doesn't matter why you're here, but that everybody agree to abide by that. And that is in this. There is that. But then right now, even if it's never used, you follow it through, and everybody who thinks they aren't goes through the same process.
Mm-hmm.
All its bumps, and you have it. Even if you never have it there, or you never use it, there it is. What with this more segmented review process? What do we do to ensure the sense of equality under a set of reasonable expectations for behavior? That's the open question.
The expectations would still be there because the code of conduct would still cover everybody,
mm-hmm.
as we go with the
right.
It's just the judicial process.
Well, that's what she's worried about. Not worried about. That's what she's wondering about.
Yes.
Which is faculty on staff. Where do you take it? Where does a staff member take it? It's cumbersome. Or at least it's problematic. There's nothing that exists. I take it the next step and say, which is what a lot of people have said in here, when you split the process off, don't you actually undermine the equality of the system?
I mean, it's it's a daunting idea to go to the dean of faculty if you have felt disrespected, right? So, and if the matter ends up employment related, even if it's a staff to staff, that's a pretty big decision you're making. Now, how much do you really want to have that issue brought forward if maybe that individual might lose their job? You know, you necessarily want that to happen. So we just need to, I think, be thinking in terms of if the code is to have an effect of equal treatment, how do we do that so it continues to be that way? That because it is the same code, how does it stay alive like that? For all, you just asked me to talk about staff, yeah. But, you know, for everybody.
Mary Beth?
Sorry, I'm late, Terry. We may have already talked about this. But one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about are the interaction between a couple of the different recommendations. And in particular, what I want to get your feedback on is the interaction of the independence of the JA's office versus being in the student's office, having faculty in or out. So would you feel, I don't know how you feel about independence or being private in the student's office anyway, but would whether staff members remain part of the subject to the processes of the code, would that impact your thinking about that one way or another? So just to make it a little simpler,
simpler would be even better.
If the office moved to the dean of the student's office but retained jurisdiction, so to speak, over staff, how would that feel?
Staff and faculty?
Staff and faculty.
Where the JA's office resides isn't, I mean, it's not like I think one way because it resides in one part of the organization or another.
I'm just picturing one night, one weekend at Cornell Police and arresting or referring, for better, two faculty members, a staff member who's actually laid off, a student who's not currently registered but will be in the fall. Hey, I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to send my paperwork. you know, how many different offices are going to exist to deal with this one? Is it going to be college-based? Well, then I've got, 11 different offices to affect for not only, dean of faculty, great, that's one guy, but, you know, different colleges, different employments, different departments on campus. I'm starting to get ahead.
Well, you know what the office personnel office considers its purview. It's the staff and faculty, right? The JA's office, if it were moved into the dean of students' office, isn't that a sort of and it continued to have jurisdiction in its adjudication process over faculty and staff? What rationale could one have for giving to a dean of students office disciplinary matters and code enforcement and adjudication having to do with for faculty and staff?
Well, since it's not non-employment related, its placement isn't
an issue.
Because it's not employment.
For you, I could definitely imagine individual staff members resenting having to go to the dean of students' office to deal with a staff matter.
Well, the difficulty of placing it I wasn't here in 1969, but the difficulty in placing it anywhere and then giving it the full group to review from an employment standpoint is wherever it is an employment setting. So the issue I would have is if it's in the dean of students, it's within a broad vice presidency unit and it's thousands of people employed in it, and so it actually isn't apart from their employment setting because it is inside of a hierarchy that thousands of people are in for their employment.
But what does the dean of students' office know, for example, about the research dimension, which isn't a student-related activity? Or let's put it this way, I'm sure they know a lot because there are people on the staff who are professors and stuff, but or like the director. But it seems to me that an office that is based in the Dean of Students' office, because it implies, let's put it this way, that the entire mission of Cornell is teaching and students. And we know from getting our jobs that 30-40%, sometimes 50%, sometimes more, is actually research and not students. So to have the disciplinary matters having to do with harassment or other things like that, that might well not involve at all any students, to be dealt with in the Dean of Students' office seems, let's put it this way, unusual.
Question for
Mary.
It's Mary. Mary? Okay. So, as I students who engage in such a violence off campus, can be a presidential directive for the JA to consider that conduct because it's facing the entire community.
You know what? I don't have the code with me. I don't remember the language.
It's exceptionally
brave. But what I don't know is if it's just students or everyone.
Now, on every job application, they're printed, blah, blah, blah. Staff member, or I wonder, does faculty members fill out job applications the way the rest of us do? What, if any, non-work-related exceptional conduct can employees engage in that would today?
Under the current code?
Yeah.
I guess I thought that provision applied to everyone, but I'm
it
not.
Does. It does. It does. It's written in that way.
I think that it. I think we have an equal.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to have to go.
Yeah,
but
I know
you're. I guess the overarching issue for me, and again, I think the employee assembly is going to talk to staff and get some specifics. Is that the staff population here doesn't have. Is staying, we hope, a long time, and doesn't have the protections of, say, tenure. They are, in many ways, a very vulnerable population. And so, however we work this, whether we stay the same or we change or whatever comes out of this, that's the population that I test a lot of these ideas through up on, because they are more vulnerable. Their employment is more vulnerable, and yet they don't have, they are often here for their, if we're lucky, their whole career, which over time, unless you can stay completely under the radar screen, means that you collect a whole story about yourself. And so I just would say that they're a good test when you think about whether something, a change will work. If you think about whether it will work for the different members of the staff, it's not the only test, it's just a good test.
Thank you.
And as you talk to the EA, if you come up with something, feel free to come back and speak with them.
Donna and I talked only briefly, but I know they do have intentions of getting out. And
We would like to, from them too, and there is an open forum next Monday, which everybody's invited. You and the EA.
And if the EA is going to be discussing whether off campus will be covered, get a good sounding on that. That's an essential one. And I'd say, although this is not, it's built into some of the things that we have to consider. Whether work-related campus code violations should actually be removed from the certain circumstances of employment, the current circumstances, and should be placed under the judicial system, independent judicial system.
Yeah, I would really need to. I understand the concern, but I would really need to think about that.
Well, no, I know. No, I'm just asking to get their opinion in case, because it will come up. I know it's come up in communications with me, and so I have to bring it to the committee, and I think it's worthwhile.
I think the short answer to that too is often it is. It's just not the campus judicial system; it's a criminal justice system. When you're dealing with matters that violate the code, that are also a violation of law. If it's that grave.
No, these are harassment circumstances or circumstances where one is perceived harassing circumstance by a supervisor, for example, that you know, duties beyond the not sexual harassment, but work related harassment.
I know, Mary, you need to get to another.
Sorry, thank you.
So I appreciate that. If you do have your time to think about that, though, do come back and let us know what you.
I thought maybe we could follow up offline so I could get just a little bit better understanding, because I can't seem to frame it even a short response.
No, that's right. I understand.
So I could maybe do some.
Thank you. I'd like that.
Thank you. Sorry to think.
No way. Thank you very much for your time and coming.
Snowing a little bit out there, too. Yeah. Kind of real fine grain stuff.
Thanks again.
Cheers.
And I am on the legislative assembly, so I can bring up questions and make
I left a message with, was it Dawn?
Donna.
Donna. A couple of weeks ago, and now her back, and I haven't had a chance to follow up with her, but we would like to get, you know, EA to weigh in and certainly attend the open forum. So, and get, you know, because it's that part of it.
So we meet tomorrow, Kristen, for a little retreat, so I can remind them about this.
Great.
We'll be sending out the reminder to EA listeners probably on Thursday. Reinforcing, right?
So Mary raised a good point. Because, you know, the staff is so very vulnerable. We need to keep them in mind. Let's just talk a little bit about how things are going around on Monday. Did a conclusion get reached about how the room's going to be set up? How's the room going to be set up?
Put your room plan forward, too.
Okay. You know the fireplace?
Yes.
I suggested at least two half circles or two half arcs with the there's a fire lane from the fireplace to the door opposite it, so it's open. That's left open, but on either side, with it's not a very big lane, we'll be gathered in an arc coming away from the fireplace facing the door, rather than, in other words, at the far end.
So we'll be like in the middle of the room.
We're in the middle of the room. We're facing the door, so it actually is, I thought, more inviting. People will come up, and it's more in the round than it is to have us at the far end and a big table or something of that sort.
So are you still going to have microphones available? Is the CJC going to be like at a front table or something?
We're not at a table, as far as I suggested, which is just chairs, because, and you said something about it being filmed.
Yeah, we're going to videotape it.
Right. So I think we should, if it's good enough camera, we should be able to get most of the sound we need out of that.
Well, my only concern was, and we ran into this at the UA meeting, where there were just two mics available for the UA members, and it was very cumbersome to ask a follow-up question and to be heard and stumble-bumble with microphones going back and forth. And so...
Well, what I thought about that...
I guess my initial idea and was to kind of set it up like an SA meeting, because then all the CJC members would have mics. And it doesn't have to be that way, but some way so that you folks, if you have... If someone makes a statement or, you know, says something and you want to ask a follow-up question, I think it's really important that you're heard by the speaker, by the audience, and on video. So
I've filmed a number of things with a video camera, and if you direct the camera,
well, MTV is going to do the filming.
Okay, you could. I'm sorry.
I don't know the technology.
In addition to whatever the filming should be, I do think it would be great that whatever technology is required to really allow a dialogue between whoever's on one side, whoever's on the other side, however these chairs are set up, so that we actually can ask questions and we can have responses to them.
Well, there are two things that I come in mind. The problem is the dialogue is also facilitated by positioning of people. I mean, I don't want to get I'm happy if you, anyway. If you put people at the far end with a lot of microphones around them, it looks like the Inquisition.
Yeah.
And the best thing to do is to have you be part of the community, we, community members. So that's why I thought if you have an arc, a double arc, that's on either side of the fireplace, on the narrow side of the room.
Why do you draw it so we so
yeah, the double arc thing.
So basically, fireplace here, there's fire in it. The door over here that goes out, the big door is over here, and the altar, whatever it is, over on that end. And then
the west side.
Yeah, the west side. Okay. The committee is like this, and there are chairs like this for the public facing in to the committee. Not a lot of chairs because I don't think we're going to get thousands of people. I really don't.
I don't know. I've been out there.
Yeah.
Well, maybe 200. What do you think?
No, and that would be fabulous.
Yeah,
I think
okay.
If we got 200,
at the max. I would say at the max. And that's why, that's a lot. And I would say that's why you don't want to have and more chairs.
All right, so where?
It looks very sad. And then what I suggested is to have three, four microphones. These, if they're omnidirectional, and which are, you know, they're very good microphones to be able to do this, omnidirectionals can pick up anything like that. These are available for audience members. And in the good sense,
I don't know what type of equipment they have, straight they have omnidirectional.
Yeah, they do. They
do. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. No, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure people can be heard, because I couldn't hear questions.
That was a bad hall. It's a bad hall. I played in that hall, and it's
yeah.
not a great
in the biotech. Well,
it's not a great hall for listening to. Expects microphones at your voice. I mean, this circumstance at Memorial Room isn't also
it's
terrific.
It's lovely, Marty. I think it's terrific.
Well, I'm not trying to defend that.
I'm saying that
this probably will work.
Yeah.
This probably will.
So it's just a matter of asking for the multi-directional.
Yeah, I was just asking to have wide directional mic, and then your camera can go either here or over here.
And if you want a dialogue,
and you can be wild. Yeah. One thing I raised in an email to Jeff earlier today, but that I think is really important, I want to bring it to the whole group, is that this event is not featured anywhere on the Assembly's website. It's not at assembly.cornell.edu, it's not at the UA site, it's not at the DJC site, it's not at the Cross Report site, and it's not on the Cross Report comments wiki.
It is on the Cornell calendar.
Okay, but when people want to find something out about this process,
yes,
those are the places they're going to go. In fact, last week at our National Lawyers Guild meeting, people were asking me, when's this forum? I said, okay, I'm going to check and report back to the group, and I looked at all those episodes, and I couldn't find it anywhere. I said, was I hallucinating?
Well, we
has
can,
this not been
we can put it up.
So you
can
be
awesome. And if you ever want anything at all up on the Assembly's website, all you have to do is contact Ari or myself.
And you also have the cues for the front page and the corner page.
Yeah, and I have control over that, so it works.
There you go.
It'll be on Cornell.edu. There's three events that are highlighted. We don't have a good photo, so it'll be in the second or third slot. But I've asked it to go up on Friday, so it's up over the weekend through Monday. So it'll probably be in the third slot because it'll be up. That's a long time for us to leave it up at this point in the year. But I'm hoping that people will notice it over the weekend. And we have sun ads started today. Those will run every day through Wednesday, or through Monday. It was just quick and dirty, not a lot of words, just hopefully people will notice it and get there. Chronicle's going to run a small article. I'm looking at Dan.
You sent us a longish paragraph.
We
ended up running that under Assemblies.
Okay, good.
So it has a prominent place near the top of the page.
So there's something there. Paul Prince is going to send out Flash probably Monday morning. That is about 1,500, a variety of people, but it's people who subscribe to the Paul Prince listserv. That's about 1,500. I sent a notice to Slope Radio. Maybe we'll get some students from the activity out of that. Haven't heard back from them. I've sent it to Denise Cassaro and the longtime friend of mine. And asked her to put it not only on her listserv, but also forward it to friends and colleagues. She's in the residential program. Folks in the residential area tend to sometimes get involved with code issues. Maybe even some RAs, some students will want to see it too. And then we're going to be sending it out on all of our assemblies listserv, I think, of tomorrow or Thursday. And our normal process is for them to then forward it on to others. And that's especially important in the graduate community. That seems how they best get their information. one of my difficulties is the timing. Because it's on a Monday, you know, if I send it out today, I'm afraid it'll get lost. I'm kind of waiting until Thursday.
And you'll be there Monday, right?
Yes.
So that's what we've done. Hardy, you're the only faculty member over here. I don't feel I've done as good a job with some of the faculty groups in terms of getting the word out. Are there groups?
Charlie will send it right out.
Send it to Charlie and ask.
Absolutely.
Him. Okay. I'll do that again as another hit. I mean, in addition to your email that went out the 24th.
And we can also, Marty and I are on a listserv with some of the
CUFDJ.
Oh, terrific.
Well, it's CUFDJ.
No, I'd love to see some folks there. I think it's really important, and I would love to hear them speak. I really feel support for, people have opinions.
What's missing is, of course, undergraduates. I mean, in terms of comments, they're very light, and in terms of participation on the committee, it's light. And we really do need to have more than just, pot shots. We need to have people feeling like they're actually participating in shaping this thing or reshaping it.
There were a handful of undergraduates that spoke at the
very good ones.
So have they followed up with things in writing? Or
do we have the names of those folks?
Only have the minutes.
They're done?
I'm not sure.
Max Henderson was one of them, who I think is working on getting a guest room in the Sun later this week. And through his Facebook group, he's also been alerting them to the website and also the forum.
I'm on that Facebook, so I can send that out. Yeah. Any information about that or post something?
You can try. If not, he can.
Okay. Do is send you my little blurb.
Cool.
That's just a short, short paragraph or a long sentence?
it was a short paragraph.
So, there's a lot of reach that way, especially with students who are interested enough to know about it. And there's a couple more in the essay who were interested at the UA meeting.
The essay president was one.
Sorry,
I'm going to have to. Yeah. Well, but I will be there Monday night.
Thank you.
What about the student
organizations
like
that in the school? They do. You mean to kind of blast them again? I try to be respectful of people who may not say, because I know how much spam. And it's not that I feel to spam, but some people might, and then we just end up kicking people off. There was an email in December and an email in January about this, one from the president, one from the CJ, and now this most recent one from the CJC.
I was thinking more like student leaders who might be more active.
Well, the essay listserv. We were definitely going to send it to all of the assemblies, all four of the assemblies, GPSA, SA,
EA,
UA.
Is there a question for the SA?
I don't know. Where are our student representatives?
Yes, I know. Our
undergrads. Yes. That's what we need. And I'm doing all I can to promote. I'm not quite sure.
Peggy, in light of that, Kathleen was saying that we had to go through some process replace. Why don't we just do it?
I basically did. I told Elon to notify people, basically.
Right.
But also notify the other person that he's on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Lewis can attend anyway.
No, I don't mean attend. I mean actually be.
I know that, but regardless, he can be here. I think yes, it comes down to when you start voting on things, it's important to have a full complement of people who've been here. But that doesn't exclude him from attending these meetings in the meantime and being an interested participant, which we haven't seen yet. But we're working on getting him appointed, and the other person who hasn't shown up at all is working on that.
So what's going to happen? We had talked about having, people fill out something. What's going to happen? Somebody comes in, they come into this meeting. What happens?
I think it would be great if we could do it 3 minutes, 4 or 5, do 3 minutes just on, like, you know, the shortest timeline possible from, like, the day that the Crouch Report was printed until today.
Mm-hmm.
Came in November. We heard more about it. Since then, here's what we boiled it down to. Most of the feedback has been focused on blah, blah, blah. What do you guys have to say? And then I think a decent number of people will come. Just based on the UA meeting in December, when I feel like a lot of people found out about it the day before, and they're eager to come in just a few minutes.
Who wants to do the summary?
I could do it and send it around later tonight, and we could figure it out, but, you know, just the short.
Okay.
Thanks for coming here.
You want the two of us to do it? I feel like we're putting a lot on you this
time. Well, yeah, I'll type something up and send it to you.
Here's the thing I think about Jeff about the summary is that it. I'm really eager to get a lot more undergraduate student input because, you know, 70-80% of the cases are undergraduate students. And in fact, what's prompting, 90%?
Oh, yeah.
And what's prompting the Krauss report is undergraduate students, and what the effect is that. And so we want to make it clear that this is an effort to, by some, to take the undergraduate experience and somehow enrich it in one way or another, or rationalize it. That's what's behind it. And so undergraduates should seriously weigh the effect of these three areas and comment on them, you know, having done some research rather than, in other words, done some thought about it. And that's why charging them at this meeting with a kind of opening statement would be useful. And then you won't get this kind of response, which is, it's as if we are part of the administrative process, and we're not. We're part of the gatekeeping process in a way.
Yep.
And so their opinions to us are very important because as gatekeepers we can register them as, you know, part of the opening or closing of the gate. Yeah?
Okay, so we have a 3 minute introduction the two of us will work on.
Sure.
And then what happens? Are we going to give people, back to the question, are we going to give people a piece of paper where they write down their comments and hand them in, and then we do them in the order?
We talked one way or the other about it. We said that everybody who brings up comments should have a piece of paper, either before or after, on which they put down the substance of their contribution that we can then...
So how are we going to... I want to be clear. So somebody comes to the meeting, okay? They just go and sit down, or do we have to fill something out first?
We have greeters at the doors, and
we have greeters
kind of
at the door.
Welcome and hand them kind of a paper just in case not everybody has a chance to speak. We can at least know what they're thinking
right.
or what.
Well, that was part of the reasoning behind it. So
I would suggest you could have a little card system where people could write down, just their name and, collect those cards, keep them in the order that people came in, and use those to call people up to mm-hmm. say their bits. And when I walked into that UA meeting, I thought, there was this little stack of pieces of paper and pencils, and I looked at it, and I thought, I prepared 6 minutes of remarks. This little bookmark is useless to me. And I wonder how much useful feedback you're going to get on little tiny pieces of paper.
Well, you're different in the sense that you also had your prepared statement, which you gave to people, I
yes.
believe. And there are, obviously we can accept that. I'm just saying that there are a lot of circumstances where, I don't know how many people get, it's like, for me, it's like giving a concert. You just don't know how many will show up, and then when 100, 200 show up, you're really happy and so forth. So you want to be flexible to accommodate the circumstance that only 10 people show up. But in the end, what you want to get out of it, whether it's 10 or 100, is some kind of index of what opinions have been, in short form, have been expressed, so that you can then put them together in compilation, which we're going to talk about eventually how to do that, that then you can present to the president or the UA and say, this is what the opinion has been. Just the way this piece is emerging.
Right. I guess that what's important to me in planning this is, I think, you know, you create a forum like this, and people show up with the expectation that they are going to, you know, deliver some comments orally. And you're making a recording of that, right, which you can also use to digest what opinions you got. Mm-hmm. But it seems like for an event like this, the planning should be focused on efficiently receiving.
I agree with you, and I guess it's the transition between that point of oral thing and us being knowing what they said that's been a problem with the UA meeting. And I realize that it was difficult to transcribe, but the fact is I can hear most every word that's said there, so it's there. It's just, so what we have to do, and I'm not faulting anybody for that, I'm just saying what we have to do is decide at this point whether we want to take that point of view, which I think is a good one, I agree with that, which is people are delivering oral reports, then we have a responsibility of distilling them by transcribing them and doing précis of them, or whether we want to ask them to do the extra work of writing down the substance of what they had to say so that we can take that as opposed to going through the whole transcription and the distilling process.
We'd like to hear your comments today and also read them tomorrow.
Well, what I'd like to suggest is that if you guys can prepare a half sheet that looks semi-official, you know, and as a website for the forum, is that what it's called?
I call it forum
festival. Yeah.
Or I think flowers. I don't know what's right, though. So. You want a half sheet?
Yeah.
I guess.
And that, because that everybody on the committee can sort of mingle around, shoot the people, say, if you want to speak, please tell us briefly what you're talking about. If you have more to say, here's the website for dialogue. But, you know, we're going to use these cards, and then...
So how do you cue people?
Well, this is what I would... Okay, so you hand out these cards, and we get all the cards.
And we ask, are you going to speak?
Yes.
And they say yes.
Here's
the 5x7 card. And then what?
Then we collect them all, and if you guys don't mind, I like those master ceremonies, I'll need somebody to help me with the clock. So we're going to keep them to, what did we say?
3 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. So we get them, and either in the order in which they're handed to me, or if we have time, try and sort them by the ones that address our three issues and the ones that address other issues. And then as time allows, okay, this is your name, I have your card, please, you know, somehow get them up and
would it
speak.
Be easier, double the amount of paper use, here, everyone shows names, 5x7, in addition, if you'd like to speak, sign up.
Yeah,
we can do
that.
First,
yeah, you'll sign up
with it.
Right.
I just want to make sure we get the cards back so that we could some sense of what people are concerned about. That was part of my thinking.
Well, you give them political meetings is they put a list at the back and you get to sign on to see, or not, you know, town board meetings or whatever. You sign up in the order that you're going to speak.
Right. It does reward people for getting that room.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned that we're turning an oral forum into a written forum.
Right.
I understand the need to kind of compile and have this information available, and we will work on that. But I'm thinking about as I go to speak, if it were me and I walk in there to speak, the last thing I want to do is to have to sit there and write down my three salient points. I'm not going to want to do that.
Okay, Peggy, then
so
I agree.
I'm just speaking from...
All right, if you're willing to do
so
the digesting and...
To work somehow get that
transcribe and digest for me.
Because I don't think. Now, I do think it's a good idea to still hand comment cards out to people and just say, if you have any comments you wish to write, here, and we'll have a repository for that. So if people want to write a comment,
okay,
they're more than welcome to.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that it has the website address, so if they want to send in a report or anything afterwards, they know where to send it to.
And everybody can come up to one of those two mics.
Right. Well,
so we need a sign-in sheet or order of speaking.
Sign-in sheet or order of speaking.
Too many people. We are going to have to have some sort of
sign-in. I was going to ask about these cards. If I'm not sure what you want to direct them, how much direction you want to give them about what issues to speak about in terms of organizing them to make sure that you have people talking about the issues that are important to the committee. But perhaps having a card that said, which of these issues do you want to talk about, maybe in the other box for, you know, if they have something else they want to talk about.
Do you want
to
do that?
But then what does that buy you?
Well,
you could then take the cards and sort them by topics of interest and, you know.
Yeah, but what if somebody comes and wants to talk about, you know, the right to have a lawyer, and then none of them
will. Do we necessarily need stored written comments on Monday into any rubric? Couldn't they just be chapter 2, the forum written comments? I understand what you're saying, so that you don't have to spend like 3 days like reading each one and putting them in piles. But I don't see why we would need to.
No. I'm talking about at the forum. If you want the comments, if you want to hear comments about the things that you've identified as the key issues.
Yeah.
No, I guess I'm being one of the sort of principal people to try and limit discussion of three issues, at least our discussion. I'd still say at the forum it should be open season on anything. And in fact, all the issues
because
should be discussed equally.
They feel like
and that's what the editorial is about.
Right.
But the thing to do is in our opening 3-minute speech is to give the rationale for our having chosen these three. And to say that of the three, the one that you probably are most interested in as students or would be the off-campus. I mean, I don't know whether students would care one way or the other, whether staff and faculty are covered by it or not, or whether they would want to voice a lot of opinion about it. They certainly would want to voice a lot of opinion about on-campus, off-campus. That's of our concerns, but they certainly also will want to talk about right to remain silent. I mean, that's what the deal is with
right.
the editorial.
Yeah.
So we should all have the opportunity. And then we'll be deliberating that later. We don't need to talk about
and
that.
So it is important to get them to sign on the list. So we'll do them in the order in which they sign
so
in.
So I'm thinking Meredith, I heard, would be a
great reader.
Crowd control reader at the door would be terrific. And we would have a table set up nearby, and Mary Beth can be saying, do you plan on speaking? Do you wish to speak? Can you please sign up at the table?
Sign up table should be right next to the last person on the line. So that, in other words, people can come through the door rather than put a sign up table over here.
Right.
Because the sign up table should be where people coming in late can do it, and we can just refer back and forth to it.
Somewhere in that vicinity if people are coming in late. And, you know, you might get people wandering in at any time.
Sure.
And somebody speaking, you don't want that sign-up activity too close to...
And we can
no, they're going to be...
People
are going to be speaking here.
Our intent is to be visible.
You
we want to encourage people.
Yeah.
So we'll have a table for sign-up, and we'll also have some cards or something available with the opportunity to, you know, if you want to give us feedback, you can write anything you want, and we'll have a box that people can put it in. And it'll also have the feedback site, or if you'd like to provide feedback on the blog, here's the site, and kind of reinforce that.
Right.
What do you want us to do with these comment cards after we receive them?
That's what fire's going for.
We'll
decide how to do it. It may be depends on what we get.
I actually think it's hard more as a way of if they don't have time or don't feel comfortable getting up and speaking.
Because
they've got something in their hands that they can go back and say, yeah, I'd be really trying to do
it. It would be nice also if on the sign up sheet it said faculty, staff, student, and they could check.
I don't know if we need to say
what,
that.
What would you do with that?
I think people are going to have varying expectations about what will happen with these comment cards, and it would be helpful to tell them up front what you plan to do with them.
Is it possible? And if you say no in your official capacity, then you could just do this, go to Eurus and check out 3 laptops for 3 hours and place them on the table we wanted to use for handing out cards and go.
That is a wonderful idea.
So,
no, we wouldn't have to go to Eurus because we could probably get laptops.
So the sign-up sheet is on the computer or no?
Yeah, the sign-up sheet still, but yes. That's only like, you know, half dozen pieces of paper, but then we don't have to have time to
pieces
of paper. So it's a feedback mechanism.
Right.
You expressed concern about telling whether it's a faculty, staff, student, and I'm curious about that. Well, actually, you did also, right?
I'm not so much reflectively saying it's a bad thing, you shouldn't do it. I'm just curious. What would you do with that information on the sign-in sheet?
Well, if you're signing up and you're giving your opinion, it's good to know whether it's coming from a sector, what sector of the university it's coming from.
I don't think it's bad on the sign-up sheet because they may feel that may influence who gets to speak. But I do think the context is important. I think the context is important to when they get up to speak, please identify yourself and are you faculty, staff, or students, so we know the context of what they're saying. But I think if you ask them to put it on the sign-up sheet, they may feel that, you know, we may censor them based on their affiliation or something. People will get weird ideas.
You know, the other thing that I'm wondering is if we want to have it possible for people to give anonymous feedback.
Well, we do already.
Oh, is it possible on the
blog?
You can be on the blog anonymous, or you can send it to us individually anonymous.
And also, wouldn't it be anonymous if they use the little computers we're already on?
I don't know how you're going to do that. What is just the
Well, it's not so much that it's anonymous as you get to say what your name is when you submit it, so you can write anonymous. We direct them now specifically to write anonymous if they want to be an anonymous.
So are those 3 computers in the Willard in the memorial room going to be networked to the blog? Is that the idea?
They have wireless in there. You don't have to.
Seems like it.
Will they be typing into the wiki? That was the idea.
That's fine. Cool idea. So we don't have to do cards.
No, that's great.
Good.
It's terrific.
We just need to direct people to.
And
then, but we do need a sign-up sheet. And then just check for computers. Solitaire. You should provide something for written comments if people don't get up to speak or don't want to
get up to speak. We'll have some
welcoming as possible.
Tags of paper. If someone wants to write or do something, maybe the 5x7 is a good idea. If you buy a pack of those, there's a couple hundred in a thing.
And then what happens to them at the end of the meeting?
Well, we'll have to get one of the suggestion boxes. We have a box, don't we?
Yeah, but we want to be able to, you know, tell them this is what's going to happen to the accountants. I mean, are they, who's going to read them? Who's going to compile them?
They'll be read by the committee?
They'll be read by the committee. I mean, my idea is we'll transcribe them as written comments from the forum. And
we may even put them on
number 1 through 10 or whatever, or right. From whatever we have, and whatever they want to give us. And then we'll just put it into like a Word document of sorts or something. I don't know. We'll get it.
Will it get put on the website somehow?
Maybe.
If you want it to.
Because we should tell them that up front then that these may be posted on the website.
In this procedure of things, you can say there are 3 ways you can make some first deck. Computers, or first speaking, second typing, third note card. All of them will go into the...
And other than the speaking, they're all anonymous. They can be anonymous.
Yeah.
The typing of the note cards can be anonymous. Speaking, we will ask you to identify yourself and faculty, staff, or students.
So what do you want on the sign-in sheet? Name, net ID?
Student, faculty, staff.
Yeah, that's fine. Nobody's going to get put off by that.
I don't think so.
I mean, if they're going to get up and speak. The point is, when they get up and speak, I mean, one's going to wonder who they are.
Well, that's why I say. I would ask them to identify themselves.
Well, then it's on the word. Then it's on the tape, and you have to transcribe it. Why not have it on a piece of paper?
Anything else? We could potentially put it up on, like, Cornellcast or something if you wanted to as well.
I don't know. I wouldn't do that yet. You mean
right
now?
I'm just throwing it out there.
You mean right
live? I want to get people
talking about it. You know, we've got to get out there.
You mean live? You're talking about live?
No, it won't go live.
Oh, okay.
We don't have the money for that. But
see how it goes.
Let's see how it goes. If we have five people, then we don't want to put on a Cornell.
Well, you know, a crowd or no one. Both of those things say things. You know, and you know,
well, I don't want to be sitting there waiting.
Well, I know, Marty, but I mean, but still, one has to be, realistic.
It'll be like the camera in the top of the Johnson School, looking at Cornell.
I think the more publicity, the more transparency, the better.
Hey, if you strike a chord with something, I think that's good. That's good to get people talking about
it. You're going to be there, right?
I will be there.
Why don't we decide if it goes...
I think that, the last thing I want to do would be, is to say we didn't do enough.
Right.
And so, that's why I've tried to be really aggressive in getting the word out. This is really the first public thing, and, advocated for the broadcast emails and things like that. So, the last thing I want for this group is to, be saddled with this, please just let us know you didn't do this. I mean, there will always be people that say that, no matter what.
So, it's 6 o'clock.
But if we can,
if anybody has an objection about videotaping, then we will let you know at that point.
And then I'll see what I can do to maybe get it up on Cornell Pass, or
does that sound like a plan?
That's okay. One jump away from us.
And we do need to stop at 6.
Pretty sure.
Okay.
That's good.
That's 2 hours.
I think that'll be all ready.
And we are giving them options for
other alternatives.
They don't, if they run out of time.
Yes.
We have a mass crowd.
And I don't necessarily expect people to come at 4 and stay the whole time.
No, I
think people might come and say what they think and then leave. Others may, not get there until 4 to 6.
So bring something to do if we have a gap. So are we set on the procedure for the open forum? Everybody set? Okay. On to how to process community input and formulate a report to the UA. Marty, you guys were having a discussion. I interrupted when Mary Opperman showed up.
It may be a little early for that, but it seems to me that we all should be gathering, and we've talked about this in several different forums. We all should be putting out to our respective assemblies and to our respective constituencies that the need for them to put their opinions in, and we ought to be then responsible for correlating those opinions. I mean, we're all going to read all the comments. I'm going to read all these comments, whether they be faculty staff, and some of them I don't know whether they're faculty staff or students. But I think in the end, we also ought to come up with our digest of our constituency's point of view about the issues. And I would say not just the three, but all of them, if they're to the extent the opinion is expressed on all of them. And then we'll come together as a committee and we'll discuss from those respective points of view, we'll discuss our findings. You follow me? Mm-hmm. You're employees, but there are a lot of employees now, but they're not, and that's why the absence of undergraduates is rather important here now.
Right.
At this, we may well have to, later in the situation, give that job over to one of us. But
our charge. When in March do we have to have a letter? Is it by the 7th of March?
The goal was something to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
by March 7th so that they could process it at their end of March meeting, so that they would have your feedback and your recommendations that they could mull over and then discuss at the end of March meeting so that they could submit a report to the president in April. Wasn't that a timeline?
Yeah.
So we basically have February to write our letter to the U.A.
And you might also think of a closing date
to publicize for public feedback, you know, like the date by which we'll be able to process it.
Well, what would that date be? Because we don't have much. February is a short month. So what's our cutoff date? Who's got a calendar?
I do, but what, I mean, I...
No, we have to cut it off before that. We'd have our letter done by March 7th. So we've got to cut it off early in February. What's the first is Thursday? Next Thursday? No, this Thursday.
Yeah.
Should we have the cutoff as early as Monday, the 5th? No.
I mean, the 15th seems reasonable.
What's the following Monday?
Look, here's the thing is that people's opinions coming in are not going to be, I mean, we can start to formulate what we are doing based upon what we have.
Right.
I mean, I can tell you now that there's a lot of opinion expressed that we can start to refine our discussion of the issues and even draft portions of it to discuss. And then if we put the 15th as a date, we can start working on a letter as early as post the 5th of February as a committee based upon what information we have, and then take account of things that come in between now and the 15th.
So you're saying that February 15th will be our cutoff?
When is that law school thing done, or is it being done, or is it going to be done?
The student who was supposed to convene the study group had a catastrophic computer failure over winter break.
Oh, yeah.
And lost the list of people who were interested. So we're trying to reconstruct that list and get to work. But if February 15th is when you want it by, we can certainly have something for you by then.
Well, what I'm thinking is whether you, you're going to talk about everything, right?
We're going to talk about everything.
Well, I was wondering whether...
we're going to talk about the things that we see as most important. You know, we may not address the faculty and staff issues because we're all students, and that's just not something that we're well-positioned to comment on.
Well, I thought you were going to talk about the legal implications of, the independence of JA's office or something of that sort. Let's put it this way. Is it possible, given what your comments at the... is it possible to circulate, if it's not to your working group, that at least to some members of it or to a wider community even, and get some response that can be then on the three issues that we're talking about? Three or four?
Yeah, absolutely.
Off campus, for example.
Right.
But also independence of JA and the current and the ownership of the code as an issue for Cornell in particular. And it's
And I think honestly, I think aside from those are some of the least interesting issues from the lawsuit perspective. Not because I or I think anyone else sees them as unimportant. And I totally agree with your decision to handle it first. But I think the position that we see ourselves in is that we're very well positioned to comment on some of the more procedural issues like standard proof, like question of attorney, like right to remain silent. Because, we study those things in terms of their place in the criminal justice system and their place
in the civil system. But, the fact is that... signing statements by the President of the United States are important legal questions.
Yes.
And the fact that we're not prepared to think about them because they're not procedural, they don't have to do with right to remain silent or something, doesn't mean that they are central issues to us. So the independence of the office or its being taken into the central administration and being an issue of that, it seems to me is a central legal issue. You follow me?
A legal issue, how so?
Well, because it's a taking away of a certain right of a community to determine its own processes for regulating behavior, okay, and arrogating them to a central administration. Now, I'm not trying to characterize this as good or bad. I'm just saying it's a legal issue.
Okay.
maybe my associate.
I would call it a policy issue, but that's not even really.
Well, I'm sure the president calls the signing statements a policy issue too. You know.
Are you guys going to talk about both the constitutional criminal standard as well as the administrative law standard for the educational? There's been a lot of focus on the constitutional standards for, like the Miranda type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really heard people talking about the constitutional requirements in the educational setting. You know, there's a right to be heard and things like that. Were you guys planning to do that?
Well,
or not?
I'm just figuring out how
we
should make sure that information also gets out.
But again, we got our three core things. Some of the things you're talking about are things that are going to have to be reflected.
Yeah, and I mean things like does this satisfy external legal requirements on the university? I think we have specifically planned not to comment on that and to leave that to University Council to figure out.
Okay.
The question they raise is about the taking who owns the code is really central to all the other questions you're going to ask.
Right.
You see, and so right to remain silent, all these other things. The question is who decides whether right to remain silent is an issue or not. That's underlies the whole. It's more fundamental, and so it should be more sexy, I guess you could say, for law students. Then even the question of right to remain silent, that is, who decides it? Is it a community-based decision, or is it an administrative-based decision? Now, you may say it's policy, but if policy, it's like saying signing statements are policy issues.
Okay, well, here's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's... Go ahead.
At this point, because I do want to get on to other things here. We've got 15 minutes. We welcome anything...
Yeah, you can put together.
The law students are willing to put together for us, realizing we now have a cutoff on February 15th, and realizing and emphasizing again that the three things that we asked you to address are really core to anything else you might want to discuss as well. So that we, again, look forward to your input, but we have to meet. We have to understand where we're coming from as well.
Yeah, I understand that. And I'm not saying that those aren't interesting issues to us.
Yeah.
What I am saying is that in terms of where I think that law students have the most unique perspective, it's on things that are, sort of more related to the legal system. I mean, because anybody can discuss and have a well-informed opinion on who decides and whether that's a good idea or, what the best idea is for who decides. And whether or not you have a year and a half of law school doesn't necessarily influence your opinion on that as much as it would influence an opinion on standard of proof.
So the constitutional issue of separation of powers, legislative, judicial, and administrative, because in the case of taking the power, that's not an issue that law students are very interested in.
Well, let's not...
I understand that.
Do you want to start drafting a letter, Marty?
Huh? To whom?
For a UA letter?
Oh, sure. I think I've already started.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
When's our next meeting?
And can I suggest, do you need a series of meetings? And
yes,
we might want
to
think about a series of meetings
science.
And get those because it's hard to
agree
week
with
week finding, especially.
I agree with you. Then.
One
of the things is we waited until everybody had their semester scheduled. So, so let's get the people who are here. What's a good time for everybody and day? And do we want to meet weekly or do we want to meet every other week? I think we almost need to meet weekly in February.
Yeah.
I mean, Cammy, next week we've got the open forum.
It's on Monday.
So what's the time? And what's the day that works best?
I think we have to meet the day after the open forum, don't we?
Well, what day and what time in a week works best for everybody?
Tuesday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday mornings.
The only all the time meeting I have is noon on Thursday and Friday at 3:30.
Noon till what? After 1:30 on Thursday would be fine.
It's fine with me too.
Tuesday is pretty between work and TA.
Right.
Tuesday back.
Thursday at 2?
Thursday.
Thursday at 1:30?
Well, no, we're saying right now we've got it down to after 1:30 on Thursday.
Is Thursday 2 all right, like 2 to 4? I'd rather not go later than 4.
That'd be good to assume the temple starts at 45.
You've only got about half your folks here.
Huh?
Not voting. Yeah, I'm just wondering what other people.
Okay, let me send out an email to the rest of the committee and
see if we can't narrow it down.
I'll try for 2, or if they can't do 2, what other time on Thursday afternoon after 1:30 would work for people? See what we get. But that gives us an aiming point. I agree with it.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, darn. I teach a seminar on Thursday afternoon. I'm very sorry. I teach a seminar on Thursday afternoon. Graduate seminar. I can't.
The whole afternoon?
The whole afternoon, 1:30 to 4:30.
What's wrong with Tuesday?
I very much.
It's really bad for Jeff.
Jeff?
I'm
sorry.
I'm very sorry.
Tuesday afternoon is out.
I apologize, Jeff.
It's fine. Tuesday, if it were between 12:30 and 1:30, it's fine. So no. Monday afternoon?
What time? Are we still going for 2?
No, I teach from 2:30 on.
Monday morning?
Okay, when are you free?
I just said Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday mornings up till 12, or Tuesday afternoon.
And you can only do Tuesday afternoon at noon time?
Tuesday I class pretty much from 12 to 4:30, or 10 to 4:30. I'm supposed to be in this class at TM right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I can always do that.
Are you available in the morning?
Before 10:10.
That's good. Is 10 breakfast meeting?
No. You can't do morning?
No. I could. Not 8 to 10.
Marty, what time do you teach?
Anytime before 12. On Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Thursday, you don't teach until 1:30?
1:30, yeah.
So how about 10 to 12 on Thursday?
No.
Or conflicts with.
How about noon to 1:30 on Thursday?
Noon to 1:30 on Thursday.
I have a Kate and I both have a noon to 1:30 every Thursday.
How about evening? Can anybody do evening?
Not Tuesday.
Yeah, not. I have.
Thursday, that's a
child.
Monday's out. Monday's out. And
Friday's out.
What about mornings again? I mean, after
8:30.
I don't think we'll be able to get everybody in the same room. Can we do alternate, like, do one Monday, one?
How about two?
Tuesday,
right.
One.
Or 10 o'clock.
Different days throughout the month. Try to get a bunch of people.
I think you need to have 6 members who are quorum to vote. the committee.
Are we talking 4 to 6 then? I mean, I suppose 4 to 6. We did Monday 4 to 6 for the open forum.
Well, she can't do evening.
Oh, you can't do 4 to 6.
Yeah.
Well,
how late could you?
Probably about 5. I should figure out by 5.
3 to 5. Monday
3
to 5?
Yeah.
Monday
3
to
5? Yeah, 3:30. But 3:20. My cross goes till 3:20.
3:30 to 5?
3:30
to 5. Oh, that'd be lovely. Thank you.
On Monday.
Right.
As long as we get 6 people, we're good to go.
So that was
6 voting members, 12th,
right?
Right.
February. We'll send out an email. 12/19, and you will share everything. 12/19, 26,
and so Marty, if you can draft something up before the 12th, and send it to everybody, assuming we're going for the 12th, and everybody, you know, and. Read it and come in with an edited version so we can immediately start work on drafting. 3:30 to 5 Monday. I'll let you know. All we need is 6. We got 1, 2, 3, 4. We need 2 more people.
Well,
to
I mean,
make
Kathy,
time.
We
good to go.
It would be great if we had this in day hall or someplace.
Yeah, I agree, but you know. There's 2 conference rooms anymore, and it's hard. We'll see what we can do.
Well, let's get the time nailed down, and then
we already did. Didn't
we? I need to get the rest of the committee members so we have 6
And then we'll go to you.
There's a UA meeting this week. Is anybody going to go?
Marty is going.
You got him? Great.
I may. It depends on.
Ari's headed to a meeting right after this, aren't you?
Yes.
Of the UA leadership executive group. So I guess it would be good to let Marty know if it's on the agenda, or do you want to be on
the agenda?
The chair of the student committee wrote us and said, would you report?
We're invited to report.
Jules Marwell?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Right.
Remind them to put it on the agenda. So Marty can report.
It would be wonderful if the UA would also, in that agenda item, talk about what it expects to do with any report that we have, or start to think about that. In other words, in this deliberation, at tomorrow's meeting, rather than just us reporting, it would be great if they started talking about what process they anticipate beyond this. I mean, they may not say much, but it'd be useful for me at least to understand that while I'm drafting this.
Okay.
And one of the things I think that needs to be included in the draft is something along the lines of there's all these other items that we didn't address.
You write a paragraph like that,
that
to me, and I'll talk
that
about
will
it.
Need to be.
You write a paragraph.
Volleyball.
Yeah.
You write a paragraph for me, and I'll write a
paragraph. I guess the meeting is adjourned then?
Yeah, adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.